From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day, Monday, December 18th, 2017. And on this day, Senator Susan Collins has said she'll support the Republican tax reform package. We'll have details. And we'll hear from a former Maine policeman about facts and myths about police shootings. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
Maine Senator Susan Collins spoke on the Senate floor late this afternoon in support of the $1.4 trillion GOP tax plan.
Madam President, I rise to express my support for the conference agreement on the Tax Cuts and Job Act, the first major overhaul of our tax code since 1986.
Collins listed in detail the significant benefits she expects for working Mainers now that changes have been made to correct issues she had with the measure early on. These include letting people deduct state and local income, sales, and property taxes up to $10,000. Collins echoed the belief of other supporters that the combined changes will create jobs in Maine, in part by dramatically slashing the corporate tax rate.
Madam President, isn't that what we seek? Isn't that what tax reform should bring about? More jobs right here in America.
Collins has been one of the last Republican holdouts on the Senate side, and today's speech makes it all the more likely the plan will be approved this week. Collins, meanwhile, continues to be pressured from all sides, but as A.J. Higgins reports, she's unlikely to be influenced by that.
At Collins' Lewiston offices this morning, Rabbi Erica Ash was among a group of citizens gathered together around one cause.
Well, I'm joining with other clergy members, other people of faith, to urge the senator to vote no on this unjust and immoral tax bill.
Ash says she and others in the group, including representatives from the Unitarian and Buddhist communities, feel called to speak out.
As I look more and more at the details of the plan, I see that it's really a way to give more to those in our society who have so much and to punish or penalize those who are struggling to feed themselves, to feed their families.
Later in the day, other protesters gathered at Collins' Bangor downtown offices, where organizer Natalie Arruder of Orland disputed the suggestion that the demonstrations are predictable responses by progressive activists.
We are her constituents. I am Senator Collins' constituent. I am not a paid liberal agitator. I live in Orland, and I drove a half an hour through the snow in order to get here and stand out here in the snow, and I was here last week, and I will continue to be out here.
But other forces are praising Collins' support for the GOP plan. A collection of small business owners, as well as the Maine Chamber and Maine Auto Dealers Association, issued a statement of support for the tax plan. Speaking for the coalition of groups, Kathy Summers Grice, president of Eaton River Strategies, helped organize a letter campaign for the tax overhaul that she says will create jobs and give the economy a boost.
The tax reform measure that is before Congress can be a real driver in both our economy here in Maine and across the country. We reached out to people both in the small business community and associations that represent small business, and they were more than happy to sign on to a letter thanking her for her vote and encouraging her to vote again this week in favor of the tax reform.
And TV ads have also been running, like this one from the National Taxpayers Union, a conservative tax advocacy group.
Senator Susan Collins' family has run one of Maine's great small businesses for more than 170 years. She understands our economy, and Maine families are counting on her leadership on taxes. Urge Senator Collins, pass tax reform to help Maine families today.
Ads have also been running urging Collins to vote no. Collins continues to tell reporters that she has not decided how she will vote on the final tax package when it arrives in the Senate. And as the vote looms, that's made her such a target for political pressure from both sides, particularly given the narrow margin Republicans hold in the Senate. But UMaine political science professor Mark Brewer doubts that any of the protesting or advertising messages will be all that effective.
If you're going to measure effectiveness by getting a public official or a legislator to change their vote, that doesn't seem to be going to happen here.
Brewer says Collins' vote on the Senate tax bill that emerged last month sends a strong clue as to how she will vote this week.
There's nothing that we've seen so far since these protests have started that would indicate that Susan Collins is going to waver in any way from her original vote. I mean, she keeps saying, I want to wait until I see the final version and blah, 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 blah. But I haven't seen anything that would lead you to believe at all that when that vote comes, whether it's Wednesday or Thursday or whenever it is, that she's going to do anything different on that conference report than she did on the original Senate bill.
Still, that likely won't deter activists from making their case to Collins and her to her core supporters right up until she casts her final vote on the Senate floor. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Joe Laughlin didn't grow up wanting to be a cop. He says he kind of fell into it and then made it a career, rising to the ranks to become commander of the Special Reaction Team of the Portland Police and later to assistant chief of police. Now he's a consultant. Laughlin and his writing partner Kate Clark Flora have just published a book called Shots Fired: Misunderstandings, Misconceptions, and Myths About Police Shootings. Keith Shortall spoke with them recently about the project, which Laughlin says was shaped by the riots that erupted in Ferguson, Missouri after the shooting of Michael Brown.
So I started off with another book called No Reason, which is a rhetorical title, because you can't make any reason about what you see on a daily basis and also the misconceptions that people have about police. When Ferguson happened and I was watching that evolve and the convulsed nation and the results that happened afterwards, I felt strongly. I had sections in the book about deadly force and what really happens to the police officers and the trauma that they're faced in the aftermath and all of the protracted investigations by multiple organizations. People have no information about deadly force and the reality of that. So I focused on that. And to the audience, I know this is a tough topic. It's hard, but it's important so we can create an emotional conduit between police and the public to say, hey, wait a second, these are human beings. They're people just like you and I.
But on some level, does the public want police not to be human, to somehow be able to have some sort of special training that allows them to not respond emotionally and do better than that than the rest of us?
Of course. Police are held to a higher standard than they should be, but you know, the human dynamic is there. I think we have to develop a veneer or some cynicism to negotiate the world we live in. But we're just people just like you.
Kate, I assume you talked about the fact that you knew that when this would be published, some people would look at it without even reading it and say, oh, here they come, the apologist books from the police.
Yeah, I guess that I'm still a dreamer, Keith. I still think that it's important to give a voice to this part of the conversation. And, you know, you write the book hoping that people will pick it up open-minded and have the reaction that people do when they actually read it, which is to say, I had no idea. So that if I have a law school classmate who says to me, after describing an incident where a knife-wielding, mentally disturbed person charges a police officer and gets shot, why didn't the police just shoot the knife out of his hand like they used to? I know that even the what I would think of as the best informed and relatively sophisticated people don't even have a basic understanding of what's going into those incidents. And so we wanted to, what we were really saying is, this isn't the answer, this isn't the be-all and end-all. This is a piece of the conversation, and this book helps to inform it.
And you do that through these accounts, which are very detailed. And as you say, you know, rather sort of than lecturing at people about ballistics or the properties of particular guns and all of that, you allow the participants to describe what happened moment by moment.
I think giving people an authentic voice, actually talking to them about what it's like to be clinging to the side of a speeding car and afraid that you're at 60 miles an hour, you can't let go. Or what it's like, you know, to be in that dark stairwell and your partner is being stabbed and you can't see anything and you're trying to save his life. These are, you know, these are very immediate. They're very intense. And that's what we want people to see. We wanted people to see the reality. We wanted to give these officers a voice.
Let's get directly here into some of these misconceptions. So Kate was just mentioning people saying, hey, why didn't you just, you know, shoot the guy in the leg or shoot the gun out of his hand?
Even in a sterile environment, if we're in a range, and I'm trying to shoot your hand moving, it's pretty impossible to do. It doesn't happen like TV, the movies in Hollywood. It doesn't happen like that.
This other idea that one shot will
that's
drop.
That's a good one, yeah. And we illustrate that many times in the book, especially with the Boston bombers, the Sarnay brothers. One brother was shot 9 times, ran over twice, and still fighting with the police. Bullets don't knock people down. The energy of a bullet in wound ballistics is equivalent to a major league fastball pitch. So people who are on crack, heroin, or whatever, or enraged with anger, adrenaline, bullets do not stop people. People can still function for 3 or 4 minutes and kill others or harm others with multiple deadly wounds in their body, or it depends upon tissue damage. Wound ballistics is a long story, but it's not the movies. You know, people don't get blown off their feet and fall down and stop. It doesn't happen like that. On occasion it does, but not in real life.
And another common one, why didn't you just tase him?
Right. Yeah. Actually, we do. This is another misconception people have. Why didn't they use less lethal? We use less lethal all day long. Every 2 minutes a taser is used in this country and in Canada. Pepper mace, beanbag rounds, batons, and that is common. That's all day long. There are 34,000 arrests every day in this country, most of which go pretty smoothly. But there are a lot of violent situations where police save people in these engagements through less lethal rounds.
But not everyone is trained in it.
Not everyone is trained in it. So not everyone carries a taser, or not everyone has access to a beanbag round. You know, but the last thing you want to do is deadly force. Any officer that I've talked to, in fact, during these interviews, I had to stop the tape all the time because they were getting emotional. They would get upset. Many of them got up and walked away because they couldn't continue. But less than 5% of police officers ever use their weapon during their entire career, self-included. You know, I've had mine out, obviously. I spent many years on the SRT team, but thank God I never had to use it, because you watch what other people go through when they go through these events. It's horrible. It has a profound, painful impact on their life, their community, their families. It's there's no good outcomes in these things.
Joe Laughlin and Kate Clark Flora are the authors of Shots Fired: The Misunderstandings, Misconceptions, and Myths About Police Shootings. You can hear more of that interview from Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. We apologize for the audio issues today in A.J. Higgins' story. It was a studio problem, and we're glad we were able to bring you the story. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, for Monday, December 18th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a good night.